On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, the guys look at Derek Carr versus Matthew Stafford versus Tom Brady when they all have bad defenses. We discuss Mark Davis's terrible social media skills and go through our draft priorities with the draft coming up in just a few weeks. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Nirvana CBD at nirvanacbd.com. Use promo code AW20 for 20% off. Nirvana CBD, find your state of natural relaxation, and we love that you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
There it is! Caught! Touchdown!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yes, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. I'm RJ, he's Soto.
That's me.
So my first question to you, Soto, is how dare you?
How Go on.
Dare you? We made a gentleman's agreement. We sent a text message with handshaking emojis on a gentleman's wager. On Jake Paul versus Ben Askren, I said Jake Paul was going to knock him out. You said Ben Askren would win. First round knockout for Jake Paul. Boom. You owe me 20 anytime pushups. And when I went to cash in, you welched.
I'm not paying up on that farce.
I don't know what makes you less of a man, having no balls or welching on a boxing bet. I'm embarrassed to say I know you.
Terrible. This
podcast has lost all
pride. That should be pulled off the board right now. That was a farce. Ben Askren showed up for a fucking paycheck. And
I knew that going in, which is why I bet Jake Paul.
That ref was like, I'm going to stop the fight.
Ben Askren was about ready to fall over. He was so perturbed.
Oh, God.
He was concussed. He was done. You owe me 2810 pushups or you are forever a Welch. That's the worst thing a man can be.
I offered to give you the pushups right then and there. So I'll give you all 20 right now. I'm not doing this bullshit. There's got to be some compromise.
You lost
some
the bet.
Like
you
that.
Don't get to dictate the terms. I'm in the driver's seat. You're riding bitch.
Fuck.
All right. Well, I'm going to shame you till the end of time until you relinquish that bet and say, all right, RJ, you win fair and square. I will give you 20 anytime pushups and I will divide those pushups evenly. I'm not going to do 20 different ones, but it'll probably be at least four sessions. And I need you to acknowledge before all of our listeners and God that you accept that you lost a fair and square bet and will give me 20 anytime pushups.
The bet that I made did not win because there was some.
What? You lost
bullshit
your bet
going
at picking
on.
Fights? Oh, God.
RJ, if you want to start about. I make more money going against your bets, MMA bets, than anything. So don't even start.
Yeah, but not my celebrity thriller boxing bets, obviously.
That's true. You're 1-0. You're 1-0.
All right. Well, this isn't going away, Soto, until you're really buffering the chest from all these pushups you got to do for sucking. So more embarrassing, you welching on your bets or Mark Davis when he gets a hold of the Raiders Twitter account?
Mark, come on, man. Look, I understand what he was trying to say, and I think most people understand what he was trying to say. He didn't take the temperature of the nation, of the world, basically. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, if he would have said, I can breathe, comma, finally, just that, comma, finally, would have made a lot more context on his post.
So for those who missed it, the Las Vegas Raiders Twitter account on Wednesday, the same day that Derek Floyd's killer was sentenced guilty on all three charges.
Who's Derek Floyd?
I'm sorry, George Floyd. His killer went to jail. Justice was served. It was a good day for the American justice system, right? And so the Las Vegas Raiders Twitter posted just a big, like the white and black, I can breathe, April 20th. 2021, to which Twitter exploded. Currently, as of now, we're recording this on Wednesday afternoon, over 80,000 retweets. Now, the Raiders social media is awful.
Oh, yeah.
I don't follow a lot of team social medias. I follow the LA Kings because I'm LA Kings hockey fan, and their social media is hilarious, awesome, interactive. They know what they're doing. Like, it's fun to follow that. The Raiders, dog shit. Like, it's just, we signed this player. Here is one highlight. Here is the score. It's just like basic whatever. This is the only time they've ever posted anything that ever anybody ever cared about. And it was this tone deaf, so clumsy attempt at trying to show unification for the poor victim.
It's swing and a miss. Yeah, man. Ooh. Look, I mean, I got what he was trying to say. I think most people got what he was trying to say. The thing is, you know, I mean, common sense isn't so common, right? People are very charged up. It's a very tense time, especially in America. And, you know, you got to be extra careful what you put out there, especially when you're somebody in the public eye, especially when you have an account like the Raiders account, you know, it's a big account on Twitter. You got to be careful what you put out there. And again, just a slight one word, you know, a punctuation in one word would have put a lot more context to his tweet and what he was trying to say. And it's just unfortunate that whoever, I highly doubt that Mark Davis has the phone in his hand with the Raiders Twitter account logged into it. But yeah, whoever put that tweet out, maybe, you know,
hey boss,
Mr. Davis, maybe
you use some context here.
Yeah. Let me give you a rewrite. What do you think about this? But again, if you take a look at the Raiders organization, you know, first to hire a minority coach, Tom Flores, first to hire a black head coach, first to have a woman executive, first to have an Asian American executive. It's like, dude, they have broken barriers left and right. They won't even touch guys, players who have like domestic violence stuff. Like they're like, all right, well, we're done with you. Like, there's been so many times where they just got rid of guys.
There's probably no franchise in the history of the NFL historically that has been more on the side of social justice than the Raiders.
Yeah, because they're the everyday. Because, I mean, dude, Al Davis wasn't a bazillionaire. He was just an everyday dude who just, you know, finagled his way into owning a franchise.
So George Floyd's brother released a statement. On behalf of our family, I would like to extend our deepest gratitude to the Las Vegas Raiders organizations and its leadership for their support of our family and for our nation's ongoing pursuit of justice and equality for all. Now more than ever, we must come together as one and continue on in this fight. For the first time in almost a year, our family has taken a breath. And I know that goes for so many across the nation and globe as well. Let's take this breath together in honor of our big brother who couldn't. Let's do it for George. So the family obviously understood what was going on.
Yeah.
The family did a good job of like adding the context, because this is something that George Floyd's brother said is like, I can breathe now finally. And that's what Mark Davis was trying to give homage to. It's like, yes, I'm with you. I'm breathing with you. I stand with you. The Raiders are, you know, Mark Davis is guilty of being like tone deaf and clumsy with his words. Nothing more. Now that doesn't mean he shouldn't take, you know, this shouldn't be a learning experience and that we shouldn't make fun of him for this pretty clumsy and obvious error, but to make it any more than that is disingenuous. And you're just kind of looking to be heated up, but I get it. Like,
yeah, you're just looking for something now, right?
Wednesday was you said it perfectly, Quan. Yeah, it was a very emotionally charged day for a lot of people, and it doesn't take, it's a powder keg. So all it takes is, you know, you don't have to throw a giant torch into that powder keg. Just flicking a lit cigarette is enough to get people riled up.
Sparks.
But this is exactly what I expect from a really old man with that kind of haircut to tweet.
Yeah, but who's his editor though? Like, who's editing his shit?
Well,
who's
I think that's probably the most telling thing of all. It's not that just some goober old man Mark Davis with a bowl haircut is clumsy with his words. It's that nobody in that organization could have been like, "Hey, boss, this wording doesn't sound right. Like, this wording has connotations to what a t-shirt cops wore in the mid 2010s when another officer killed an innocent victim. Like, let's think of something better to stand with this movement, with the Floyd family." And nobody did. So I think that's more telling of the organization than anything.
It wasn't like a reporter saw Mark Davis at the Applebee's or something and like, "Hey," puts a mic in his face, like impromptu. It wasn't like, and he said something stupid. It wasn't like that. he had time, and there was people there who could have told him, like, yo, man, maybe you should say something a little different.
It wasn't just a tweet that he, like, pushed the buttons. Like, someone had to build that graphic. Like, they...
Yeah,
he
didn't...
A graphics department guy had to, like, put that together, send it to his manager, who sent it to Mark Davis, who'd probably send it to a social media manager, and all parties involved. That one person chimed in and said, guys, let's add some context to this.
Yeah, that's... Oof. That was tough, man. And Raiders, just come on. Just tighten your shit up. Come on.
Yeah. So let's move on to something you've been working on. And you've been working on this a while. You texted me literally last weekend. I was working in Vegas, got a text from you. And I knew right away that you were busting out your TI-83 calculator, doing some graphs, had your Excel spreadsheet, mathing the hell out of it. And you asked me a question. Who do you compare? Who's comparable to Derek Carr? Because after our CJ interview last week, it was really eye-opening for both of us in a lot of ways.
Yeah, big time. Just
how bad the Raiders' defense has been, and to put the blame on Derek Carr for not winning is ludicrous. Like, if you guys haven't heard it, I highly suggest you listen to our interview last week with CJ Henderson.
Yeah, CJ's great, man.
Awesome. You're going to see him on this show a lot more often. He did a great job of saying, look, no other quarterback in the last 30 years has been able to win with the defense as bad as Derek Carr. So if you're saying, oh, Derek Carr, he sucks because he can't win, it's like, well, you're asking him to do something no other quarterback can.
That no one's done, yeah.
And you can be, again, you can be critical of Derek Carr. There's plenty of things to be critical of Derek Carr for. Mm-hmm. Just be critical of the right things.
Yeah.
And so this got you thinking, Soto, and it led to 4 days of research.
Actually, the research took 1 day. I just had to clean it up. All the research was 1 day. But let me start off with, I'm not a statistician or a mathematician or an esthetician or any type of ition. I'm not that.
Mortician.
No, mortician. I'm none of that.
Physician.
Okay. I'm the everyday football fan, and RJ is the everyday pro, like, radio guy, football fan. So those are
our Tyrannosaurus.
Exactly, right. He brings all his milkshake, brings them all to the yard. What I did was, I was like, it was an eye-opening episode last week.
Yeah.
I was inspired by CJ because, I did open my eyes to what an uphill battle Derek Carr has faced since the moment he stepped on an NFL field, from the very moment he stepped on. So I said, okay, I understand that the Raiders – I've had poor defenses since Derek Carr has been in the league. And although they gave up 30 points a game on average last season, they didn't give up 30 points every single game, right?
Held the Browns to 6, baby.
Yeah.
I still can't believe it.
It would have been a lot more, right? If it would have been
imagine
a regular
if the Browns
game,
got the 30.
Like 24 or something like that. Like, it would be like 33 points.
But that's completely skewing the average. Thank you, Browns, exactly. And the 40-mile-an-hour wins in Cleveland.
Yeah, right.
That's the best thing that ever happened to our defense.
you kick it into the tunnel, and it flips right into between the goalposts. Perfect. So what I wanted to do was, okay, let me take a look at the last 7 years. And here's what I did. Follow with me, everyone. Go on this journey for me, okay? Each of the last 7 seasons, I looked at every team that made the playoffs, and I ranked them.
7 years because the 7 years that Derek Carr has been
in the league. Okay. Yeah, yeah. So every season I ranked them from best to worst as far as points per game scored against. So given up defensively, right? And I took the worst from every single year, and then I ranked those out of 7, right? You with me now so far?
Yeah. So the worst defenses that still made it to the playoffs.
Correct. Each of the last 7 seasons. And then I ranked those defenses. The low was the Tennessee Titans. They gave up 23 points per game in 2016 and 2018. It's kind of strange. And the high was 27 points per game, which is, interestingly enough, the Tennessee Titans. This last year, 2020, they gave up 27 points per game and still made the playoffs. So
is Ryan Tannehill now the king of being able to take, or I guess Marcus Mariota twice?
Yeah, Marcus
Mariota
twice.
That's why we got Marcus Mariota, right? Because they had like a 5th-ranked defense and still went 9-7 and couldn't make it to the playoffs. That's why we get Mariota for $3.5 million this season.
So the low is 23 points per game. The high is 27 points per game. And the average, because more teams are closer to the 23, the average is 24 points per game. 24 and change, but it's 24. That's what I looked at. I said, okay, I want to take a look at this. How has Derek Carr fared when a Raider defense has given up 23, 27, and 24 points, right?
And this, and they've is given up all of that because they've never had a better than 20th. So finding shitty Raider defenses isn't that tough.
Yeah, so it was a lot of games.
Hey, Soto, okay. How does Derek Carr fare when the defense is the fifth best in the league? Oh, no doubt exists. How does the Raiders fare? How does Derek Carr fare when the Raiders have an average defense? That none of that data exists.
None of that data exists. But this does exist. So when the Raiders have given up 23 points per game or less, what's his record? When the Raiders have given up 27 points in a game or less, what's his record? And when the Raiders have given up 24 points in a game or less, what is his record? And this is what I found. So now I want to say this up front. I did not go into this with any type of bias, or I didn't want to. I went into this looking for information, not affirmation.
Went in here objectively,
yes,
for the show. May the results lie where they will.
Yeah, because last week, I mean, that
unlike
was
your Jake Paul Ben Askren bet, where you were going to relinquish it later, you're willing to just stand by whatever these results are.
Whatever these results are.
Okay.
Okay. So Derek Carr, his record overall, 47-63, a 42% winning percentage. All right.
Okay.
So. We're going to start with what do you want to start with? The high, the low, or the mid, or the average?
Let's start with low.
Okay, 23 points per game. All right.
The best defense still made the playoff.
The best of the worst was 23 points per game. So whenever a Raider team gave up 23 points or fewer, that's happened 42 times for Derek Carr.
Okay.
In his career, he is 25-17. In those games, which is a 59% winning percentage.
Okay.
Now, if you multiply that 59% out over 16 games, that's a 9-7 record.
Okay.
Right. So probably not a playoff berth.
No.
You know, there's a lot of teams that are 10-6 that don't make the playoffs. So 9-7, unless you're winning the division at 9-7, you're not going to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
All right. So next we're going to go with the high. Okay. 27 points per game or lower. No surprise, the Raiders have been in 62 of those games where they gave up 27 points or less. Derek
That's
Carr's
home
record,
for them.
Right? Derek Carr's record is 36-26. Still a winning record.
Yeah.
That's a 58% winning percentage, which, you know, same. 9-7 over 16-game season. So 9-7, 16-game season. Now, interestingly enough, that one extra point to make it 24 points per game, I guess the Raiders have played a lot of games because it makes sense. Three, you know, touchdowns and a field goal get you 20, you know, 24 points. They've had 24 points a game or less. Derek Carr's record is 33-19.
Wow.
That's a 63% winning percentage.
So it's even better than when they give up 23 or less.
Yeah, weird, huh? But you multiply that over a 16-game season and it's one more win. So it's 10-6. Mm-hmm. So that is a borderline
probably, yes, maybe succeed.
I would say seven times. What is it? 75% of the time, they're going to make the playoffs if you win 10 games, right? We have it last year. The Miami Dolphins had 7-10 wins and didn't make the playoffs, right? But most of the time, if you get to 10 wins, you're going to make the playoffs.
You're in the NFC East, you go every single year.
Oh, yeah, you're winning that division. Okay. So I wanted to compare that. And that's why I asked you. I already had the Derek Carr stats. I said, okay, well, let me see. Let me plug in somebody who RJ feels is a comparable quarterback. And we both felt that Matthew Stafford is a comparable quarterback.
Yep.
Not only, you know, in stats, but also, you know, Matthew Stafford had Megatron for a couple years. Derek Carr has had Waller for a couple years. Stafford has had Golladay for a few years. Carr had Cooper for a few years. It's been a carousel of head coaches for both of them. And they've all had a metric ton
of shit defenses.
Shit defense all around, just smeared all over the place. So let's see how it panned out. So Matthew Stafford's record over the last 7 years, 50 wins, 53 losses, and one tie. So a 48% winning percentage. All right. Start off with the low. So when a Matthew Stafford defense has given up 23 points or less, Matthew Stafford's record is 40-12, a 77% winning percentage,
damn
which
good.
Turns out to a 12-4 record over 16 games.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at the high. The high, 27 points per game. Matthew Stafford's record is 47-23, which is a 67% winning percentage, which comes out to 11-5 record over 16 games. And the mid, which is, you know, it's only 1 point difference, so I'll just give you the numbers. When a Matthew Stafford defense has given up 24 points or less over the last 7 years, his record is 43-15, which is a 74% winning percentage, which still comes out to a 12-4 record.
Mm-hmm.
So now that we have this information, what can we gather from it? What I gathered from it, and then I'll leave the floor to you to tell me to just rip it apart. Mm-hmm. What I gathered from this is Derek Carr is who I said he was, even when the defense performs not at a superhuman level, but a good enough level, right, to give you a chance to win the game. He's an average quarterback. He's a fringe playoff, sometime, most of the time outside, sometimes inside quarterback. 9-7, we both agree, is not getting you in. 10-6 gets you in most of the time. So that's who he is, man. He's going to need a top flight defense in order to make the playoffs consistently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I get from the information. He is who I said he was. He's an average. He's not terrible. I don't hate Derek Carr. And I will say this. I've said it maybe 2 months ago, and I'll say it again. Do I think Derek Carr is the problem with the Raiders? No, I do not. Do I think Derek Carr is the answer for the Raiders? No, I do not. I think Derek Carr is a very serviceable quarterback. I think he's a good quarterback. I think that some of his stats may be inflated because he's in a lot of shootouts. But his record is what it is. Even when the defense does perform to a, you know, a playoff caliber, albeit a, you know, low playoff caliber, but good enough for you to win, he's still, you know, over 500, but he's not breaking the playoffs more often than not. And that's what I took from it, because you take a comparable quarterback and you give him the same points per game against, and he has, by all accounts, a division winning record, no matter if it's 23, 24, or 27. And RJ Clifford, those are the stats. What say you, sir?
So there's it's like most stats. This tells a story, but not the whole story, right? I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. you can go into Stafford's played in a dome. Generally, there's higher scoring games in a dome. It's like the AFC West is better than the NFC North, playing, I think, tougher opposition generally.
Mm-hmm.
And there's obviously a million other little variables, right? How's their run game doing? All those other things, right? But I think this is a fair, not counter to what we discussed last week with CJ Henderson, but another, you know, there's 10 ways to look at it. And this is another valid way to look at it is, okay, are we asking too much to say, Derek Carr, you have to overcome a 30th ranked defense to go to the playoffs? Yes. We're asking way too much.
Anybody.
Are we saying, okay, is it still possible with a 23rd ranked defense to get us places? Is it possible? Has it been done? The answer is yes. But I also think it takes a lot of other elements to make things work. And that's why I also love, I think, you know, just the defensive points given up and winning percentage, it tells a chunk of the story, but it also gives us an opportunity to see, like, with Matthew Stafford going to LA, what's going to happen then? Does he become Drew Brees in his prime, right? Like, if he's has a great defense and a brilliant head coach and a stable organization with a bajillionaire owner that gives you all the best possibilities, if Matthew Stafford just straight up to the moon and just takes off and becomes like the greatest show on turf, Rams from like 2001.
Fucking A, like, right?
Okay. Then it's like, oh yeah, those that dumpster fire Detroit Lions has been holding Matt Stafford back this whole time, right?
Yep.
If he comes back and Matthew Stafford plays comparable to how quarterback play has been in the Rams for a while, mm-hmm. or same as he's been playing, you know, his win percentage and everything's kind of the same since, you know, he has his whole career, then we know that Stafford is who Stafford is and his environment doesn't really matter that much. I think that's another good part of it too, is we don't know how Derek Carr would be in Seattle, New York, Miami, Green Bay. We only know how he is in the Raiders. And just, you know, as we were easily reminded on Wednesday, there's a lot of dysfunction in that Raiders organization.
Oh boy.
And not a lot of, and we had this we were arguing even before you gave us the stats last week, Soto. I was like, yeah, I like the comparable, but you know, Stafford had better quarterbacks and blah blah blah. It's like, whoa, hey, we're comparing stats here. I'm like, well, quarterbacks don't exist in bubbles. Like, it's impossible. How many Super Bowls would Tom Brady have won without great leadership in New England and Bill Belichick running an amazing defense? Like, we'll never know. And Tom Brady never has to answer that question.
No, it's like, you'll never know, right?
He never gets to answer that question. And Derek Carr can never say, hey, in the last 7 years, I would have A, B, and C if our defense was better. Well, it wasn't. The history of it.
But what we can do is take a look and say, okay, when their defense has given up 23 points or less, his record still isn't that great. Mm. So it's better than it is overall. His winning percentage is 59% as opposed to a 42% overall, but it's still not enough to get you into the playoffs consistently.
Yeah.
And when you take a look at a comparable quarterback.
But I do know when the Raiders defense is 20th, which is still bad, he's 12-3. That's the other thing we know. That 1 year where when the Raiders had their quote unquote best defense, only 20th, which is still really bad, but not god awful falling off the extremes. He's 12-3. People were talking about him being an NFL MVP that season.
I get that, but honestly, that's one season where they won a lot of games at the last second. They won like three or four games by like two or less points.
But that's what Derek Carr does too. Like it's funny you brought that up because I was literally just watching like Derek Carr highlights on YouTube
and jerking off
early this morning. Oh, just masturbating furiously everywhere. If I'm out of breath, that's why. Like that's why I'm sweating so much. I was just watching highlights, and like the biggest takeaway wasn't like his great passes, because obviously he missed passes and he made some great passes. But it was like, it would only show his highlights. So it'd be like, oh, the Raiders are up 20-3 in the second quarter. And the fourth quarter, they're down 20-24. And then so he has to make this like heroic fourth quarter pass, right? Because he's constantly having to play catch up with his defense. So that was another reminder too of like how many times his heroics we forgot because the defense just fell apart. The 2016 Saints game, arguably his greatest game, that season opener, right, where he came back 2 minute grill, they went for two at the end, Crabtree, one of his best games ever. The Saints had like 15 seconds left and still had enough time to kick a 61 yard field goal. Like the defense gave up a super tough field goal attempt, but been made before, right? Like that, I think that's the other part of it too, is like even his great late game heroics have been forgotten and overshadowed because the defense has blown it out in the end. So I think with this information and the information from last week, I think we've learned that there are quarterbacks, Stafford, for instance, who's gotten really good at overcoming bad defenses and trying to overcome some of the deficiencies. Well, Derek Carr has proven if you give him just an average bad defense, he can overcome those deficiencies and get you to a 12-3 record.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not always just perfectly linear, right?
Yeah, it isn't.
You know what I mean? Like some quarterbacks thrive in certain situations, and I think Derek Carr thrives. You know, have me down by 4 points and 2 minutes left, and I can thrive. Don't have me down 14 points with 8 minutes left, because I'll probably freak out and fumble.
One of the things that, whether it's conscious or subconscious or what, is when we get leads, we just sit. We don't continue putting up points. Mm-hmm. We don't blow teams out. And it's not because we're always giving up a ton of points, because we don't always give up a ton of points. We do sometimes and a lot of times, but even when we don't, it's still a closer game. And, you know, it's Matthew Stafford, like when he gets a lead, he doesn't take the foot off the pedal. He's still winging the ball down the field because, I mean, let's be honest with you, he hasn't had a running game. They haven't had a running game in Detroit since Barry Sanders.
Yeah.
And he just keeps throwing the ball and he keeps, you know, putting up points. And that's something to be said too. I think that's, you know, maybe a small piece of the criticism that Derek Carr has been getting is, you know, he sometimes takes his foot off the gas a little bit, and that's when the mistakes start creeping up, and that's why a 20-3 game does become a 24-20 game, because he's not scoring either.
I also think Derek Carr plays to his head coach, like Black Jack Del Rio, just like going for two every time, go bomb every time, and he would. 2016, went for two every time, super aggressive every time. John Gruden comes around. Okay, run the ball, little out, run the ball, slant, run the ball, run the ball. Don't fumble, no turnovers, punt, field goal.
Yeah, I mean, but more than half of his career has been without John Gruden. So more than half of his games have been of this.
He's had four without and three with. I mean,
I was saying more than half. So I mean, I see what you're saying, but I don't think that really plays into it, because he's had more games without John Gruden than he has with John Gruden. So you mentioned Tom Brady. Just for shits and giggles, I ran the same numbers with Tom Brady.
Okay.
And we had a discussion. I mean, it was, albeit a short one. Why were Tom Brady teams so successful? Was it Belichick's the best coach of all time? Or was it Tom Brady was arguably one of the best quarterbacks of all
time? I would even throw Robert Kraft running like a legit organization that wouldn't send out stupid tweets after a giant conviction too. I think that plays a part as well.
But anyway, it does. I think it does. So I ran the same numbers. So when I say a Tom Brady team, because I also counted the Bucks last year.
Okay.
When a Tom Brady team gave up 23 points or fewer the last 7 years, Tom Brady's record is 70-3. That goes a 96% winning percentage. That comes out to a 15-1 record. Okay. 24 points per game is almost this exact same. When a Tom Brady team gives up 24 points or less, Tom Brady is 72-3, which is also a 96% winning percentage. Mm-hmm. And it equates to, again, a 15-1 record.
Okay.
Now, when a Tom Brady team gives up 27 points or less, Tom Brady is 78-9.
Jesus.
That's a 90% winning percentage, and that's a 14-2 overall record if you multiply that over 16 games.
All right.
So
I guess Tom Brady's okay at quarterback.
You know what? It's both, because those defenses – we're not giving up a lot of points. Just because it's 23 points or fewer doesn't mean – a couple of those years, the Patriots were giving up like 17 points a game.
I think that's the other part too, is like we were talking last week with CJ Henderson, was about averages of that season, right? Like giving up your 20th. Because Tom Brady has never, ever had an entire season where his defense was worse than 20th. Like, mm-hmm. like you said, Derek Carr's best defense ever is still worse
than
Tom Brady's worst defense ever. Right.
Yeah.
So I think that's another part of it too, is like, if his defense just happens to fall apart randomly a couple times per season, Tom Brady is wired to overcome it.
Yeah.
Now, can he do that?
If you want to beat the
16
Patriots,
games a season and overcome a bad defense.
Yeah.
Come to Las Vegas.
Vegas. Yeah. Yeah. If you want to beat a Tom Brady team, basically you got to score 4 touchdowns. That's basically what's going on. You got to score 4 touchdowns because he's going to put up points. So that those are the numbers, my man. Those are the numbers. Deep inside, I wanted the numbers to show something different, because I wanted the defense improving to give us a shot at having a much better record. But the stats just don't show it, man.
Yeah.
Even when the opposing team doesn't score that many points, he's still just a fringe playoff quarterback, man. And that's disheartening for me.
Well, I still think the consistency matters too. Like, again, like, yeah, Tom Brady has, you know, like we just mentioned, Tom Brady can still win when his defense gives up bad games, but that's like 2 games a season. Like, you know, he rarely, you know, every now and then he has to play hero ball.
Yeah.
Derek Carr has to do it 14 games a season. Literally.
A small portion of that self-inflicted, I would say, you know, because
sometimes
I remember those games too, man. Those oh yeah, we're up 20-3. Sweet. It's only the end of the halftime. We're gonna be good. Then we're like, what the fuck? It's 24-20. What the fuck is going on here? Mm-hmm. It's like, come on, bro. We can't be doing that shit no more. And it's like 23 points a game isn't averaging 23 points per game. It's like that's the most they're going to score in that game. And he's still 25-17, man. That's a 9-7 record over 16 games. It's like it's not great. It's not great. And when, especially when you take a look at a Matthew Stafford, when it's fucking 12-4 record over 16 games, I really wanted it to be different. And hopefully this is just something that doesn't matter. And it's not going to, you know, translate into, which I wholeheartedly believe our defense is going to be much better this year coming up. And it's, if we're 9-7, if we have one game improvement this year, this is, I'm just going to throw up my hands and be like, look, he's just not the guy. He's just not the guy.
If the defense improves and we still don't get a better record, then we can start talking. But again, yeah, like again, we'll go back to those numbers. Can Derek Carr overcome an atrocious defense? No.
Nobody can.
Can he overcome a bad defense? No, some can.
Some can, yeah.
If the defense is just sort of bad, he's 12-3. Right? The one time he had a just kind of was worse than average.
You want to talk about vacuums? Well, that's a singular season. I'm talking about his entire career.
It's the only like true hard stat we have.
No, we don't. We have these stats here. 23 points per few or fewer given up in the game. What's his record? 25-17, a 59% winning percentage.
But again, it goes back to that Tom Brady argument. Like every single game in, game out, do you have to play hero ball? Not if you're Tom Brady. You just have to be a magician every night, like twice a season.
I just would have liked to see that lower number be at least 10 wins, but it wasn't. It wasn't even close. He was probably like maybe four or five wins away from having, you know, a 63-ish% winning percentage. And it's like, man, even when the team does hold the opponents down to a lower score, especially now in today's football, he's just still average, you know, fringe, just outside looking in playoff quarterback. And let's hope that this things change coming up. Let's hope things change coming up. And
well, the Raiders would be stupid to drastically change anything on the offense.
Yeah.
Not, right. Should've. Let's call that a spade, right? Any drastic. Yeah. Okay. Kenyon Drake, we paid too much, whatever. Okay, cool. We got him. You know, got rid of Nelson Aguilar, got Brown. Okay, cool. Hopefully this offensive line pans out. I'm optimistic it does.
There are a lot of tackles in this draft coming up. A lot. So I'm hopeful.
Well, it's funny you brought that up because the betting odds came out. And these are the only – you see, like, mock drafts and you see projections and you hear rumors – those all exist with no backing. There's only one thing when money is on the line with a piece of information.
When you're incentivized, right? That's when you want it to.
Then it matters, right? So when the bookies come out with a number and they say the Raiders have -175 favorites to go defense in round one, that means more to me than anything Mel Kiper said, The Athletic said, ESPN said, because they're all just doing their job as like entertainers. I'm not saying they're all schmucks are always wrong. I'm saying the stakes for them being wrong are almost zero. There's really no consequence. The stakes for these bookies being wrong could cost millions.
Yeah.
So my eyebrow raised a little bit when the Raiders at -175 favorites to go defense in round one. Not that, you know, on the surface level, you're like, yeah, the defense is trash. Of course they should. But then you realize, as bad as the defense is, the biggest hole on the team is right tackle. It's a draft full of really good right tackles. You'd think they'd go best on the board when 17 rolls around. But according to the bookies, they're going to go defense.
Yeah, I mean, you either take one of the safeties if they're available, or that kid out of Penn State, Micah Parsons, man, like a linebacker. He's, you know, Todd McShay called him the best defensive player in the draft. But he's going to drop because he's a fucking head case, man. He's an attitude problem. But you know what? The Raiders that I saw the tail end of when I was younger, and the Raiders that you've heard about, these are the kind of guys that they bring in.
Yeah.
Oh, you flamed out somewhere else because you got an attitude problem? That's fine.
Thank you.
Come bring your attitude over here and let's win some games.
The Raiders still do it. Richie Incognito. Alden Smith. We'll get to him later.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, that's still a thing. That's still a thing with the Raiders. Again,
even AB, he was a head case with the Steelers, skeet on everyone's back. And now he's
sure panned out, didn't it?
Yeah, right.
I would be shocked because, like, if there's one unit that doesn't need the whole defense needs help, right? All three levels. But the one unit that should be in the best situation is linebacker, Littleton, Kwiatkowski, and Morrow. And also, like, those are three when we're in 4-3. And Gus Bradley likes to go 4-2-5 a lot. So there's only going to be two of those guys in the field at one time. Look, would I love to have Micah Parsons on our defense? Absolutely.
Fuck yeah.
But that's the one unit on defense where you're like, okay, that's the one unit we're not desperate for starters. Everything else, we can use some starters. Edge rush. We signed 900 defensive tackles. Desperately need a free safety. Who knows if Jonathan Abram's going to pan out? Who knows if Damon Arnett's going to pan out at corner? The one unit on defense, you're like, okay, that's last priority of defense is linebacker. And they have us going linebacker. Micah Parsons is the Raiders are the favorites to pick up Micah Parsons along with the Chargers and Vikings.
I don't care.
Are you best player available, guy?
I want an impact player on my defense.
A player.
And he is an impact player.
Yeah.
There's a reason why when people every year, the fucking Ravens select an edge rusher or a pass rushing defensive tackle. Like, they always pick a guy because they have a ton of them. Then they didn't go away walk because they got a ton of guys. There's a reason behind that. They just pick the guy that's going to make an impact on their team. And if it pushes the other guys to be better, even better. If Micah Parsons on that team raises everyone else's level just a little bit because, hey, I got to fucking step it up because this guy's going to take my snaps, then so be it. It just helps the rest of the team. And I have no problems with him going linebacker. If he's available, I think they would be stupid not to take him because this kid is a top five talent with an undraftable brain sometimes. And this guy, I mean, to make headlines at Penn State for being a problem, you gotta be a really big problem.
That's a great point. There's a stand-up comedian that had this great bit about how George Bush got a DUI in the 70s in Texas. And he's like, you know how drunk you have to be to get a DUI in Texas in the 1970s? Like, they're just like, oh man, they pull you over and they're like, hey, sir, you're hammered. You get back in your truck and you drive straight home. All right.
Dump that beer out and get out of here.
Yeah. You get out of here.
But hey, is that bottle of tequila sealed? Okay. Make sure it stays that way. Now get out of here.
You finish that bottle and leave. You do not stop at the liquor store and get another one. You finish that bottle and drive straight home.
You have to plow through like a retirement home or something. Like, Jesus, like, what the hell? What the hell did he do to get stopped?
Who is the linebacker? Richard Smith, linebacker coach for the Raiders. Is he a guy that you think would be good at keeping Micah Parsons in line? Like, if Micah Parsons was a right tackle, I'd be like, okay, let Tom Cable take this guy under his wing, get him in ship shape mentally, physically. Cable has proven he can do that with linemen. Richard Smith, our linebacker coach, he's gone over a unit that's been atrocious for 20 years. I don't know how long Smith's been with the Raiders as linebacker coach, but like, I don't know. Like, do you want a project at linebacker?
That's a teammate thing.
Over sacrificing a giant hole at right tackle.
Well, let me answer your second question first.
Yeah.
The giant hole at right tackle can be filled in the second and maybe even in the third round. There are that many quality offensive linemen in this draft, a lot, and they're not all going to get picked up. So I have no problem with them picking up a tackle in the second round because they're going to get just as good, maybe not an elite as some of the top end guys, but they're still going to get a serviceable quality starter in the NFL for years in the second round this year. That's how many tackles there are in this draft. So let's push that aside. I think keeping a Micah Parsons in line is more of a teammate thing, right? And there's a couple things here. He has a lot of younger teammates who he can relate to, who have been in the league a few years. You know, you got Max on one side and, you know, Cleveland Farrell on the other. You got a lot of younger guys and you got a mix of some older guys that you've brought in. But it seems to be a unit that wants to do well, a unit that wants to improve. And by all accounts, Max Crosby is an excellent teammate. He's loved by his teammates. He's always positive. I follow him on social media. He's always positive. He's always, you know, posting positive things. He's got some killer dogs. I love his dogs. And that's something right now where, I mean, I would see them like, hey, let's put your arms around this kid. He's had some issues in the past, but, you know, let's find out what's going on in his head, because this guy could be something special for our team.
More to your point, the reason I didn't know who Richard Smith was is because this is going to be his first season with the Raiders. He was with Gus Bradley and the Chargers the last four seasons. And in 2020, you remember they had this badass rookie linebacker, Kenneth Murray, who had 107 tackles, setting a franchise record for a rookie. So he literally has the experience. He literally last season took a rookie linebacker and made him a stud. So I stand corrected. Richard Smith might be the guy to pull it off. I'm sorry, Richard. I'm sorry, look, Dick.
I don't care. I don't care what it is. If he's an impact player, we need him on our team. That's the bottom line.
I mean, but again, it's at the sacrifice of what, right?
Like, I mean, he's not going to be at the sacrifice of the offensive line, because there's plenty of tackles there.
Yeah.
Plenty of guys there.
Yeah. Maybe they go Michael Parsons one, and then they go like right tackle, like 2, 4, and 5. Right.
You don't need that many right tackles.
Or you just go tackle in general, right?
Tackle in general, like, you know, second round and then somewhere in the later rounds. And then, you know, you pick
up. Where are you on Brandon Parker? Are you ready to give up on him or give him a – let him
see? He just hasn't played well, man.
He hasn't.
He just hasn't played well. I think he had one decent game. Other than that, I hear his name way too often.
Yeah.
I hear his name way too much, and it's like, oh. I don't know, man. I don't know that offensive line is a position where you make a leap 3 or 4 years down the road.
Yeah.
You know, I can
see maybe Andre Jones kind of did in a couple years. I think that's.
Well, he progressed slowly because he had one of the best centers in the league playing ahead of him.
Touche. Yeah.
But, and you know, you've seen it plenty of times, the year one to year two. Mm-hmm. Colton Miller, you've seen that year one to year two, that big jump, and he's just steadily improved from there. But Brandon Parker, man, he just hasn't played well. He just hasn't played well. And some of these rookie guys are gonna, you know, be an eye opener. They're gonna come in there and they're gonna want to fucking play.
Mm-hmm. You put on here on the rundown the tale of two A Smiths, Alex Smith and Alden Smith. Very different week for both guys.
So I shared something personal about myself when Alex Smith was given the Comeback Player of the Year award, about how it's difficult to come back from something life altering, and when you do come back, people can't appreciate all the work and all the day to day stress. And the failures and the small victories and the little failures and the big failures and all that stuff. People don't see all that. People don't see the comeback. They just see the result, right? And Alex Smith retired this week. He came back when nobody said he could. And he played at a level where he brought his team to the playoffs. And he was a Comeback Player of the Year. And he's like, you know what? Let's not tempt fate too much here. I think I'm done. And God bless you, Alex Smith. Although you're a former queef, I'm chief, you're still a stand-up dude. What you came back from is not easy. I don't think anyone in the NFL has come back from anything remotely near to what you came back from to play at the level that you did. So big ups to you, man. Congratulations. Enjoy your retirement. My hat's off to you. Now, on the other end of the pendulum swing, we have Alden Smith, who was again arrested for battery. Alden Smith, I don't know what the fuck is your problem. I don't know what the fuck crawled up your ass, but you have single-handedly shit on what was a once promising, hopeful Hall of Fame career. You were the man in San Francisco. You were a sack machine. You were a part of one of the best defenses in the league, and you shit down your own neck constantly, over and over and over again. So I don't know what the fuck.
For the longest time, Alvin Smith, it was just kind of like, oh, he failed a weed test, or he periscoped himself smoking a joint like an air. It was just kind of like, oh, this goofy dumbass.
He pointed a gun at somebody. He now, beat the shit out of somebody.
Now it's like, getting, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Man?
Before it was kind of like, oh, this goofy Alvin Smith. Now it's like battery, weapons charges. You're like, okay, dude, you went from like a goofy, funny fuck up to like, okay, you're a.
He went from having poor judgment to being a criminal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And look, Alvin Smith, if you happen to listen to this, I wish you the best, man. I wish you the best. I've had a lot of people in my family who have issues. I'm not speaking out of turn here. I'm not saying that you have this issue or anything like it, but I've had friends and family members who have had some mental health issues, who have had substance abuse issues. And I know it's hard, man. I know it's tough. Go get some help and straighten your life out, dude, because there's still a lot of life left for you, man. You're in your mid 30s right now. You're probably going to live to be 100 with the way modern medicine is. You have a lot of life left to live, man. You can be somebody who can help a lot of people if you can just get your head straight on. And I hope you do, man. I hope you do. For all of the fringe football players like RJ and myself who couldn't even dream of sniffing the NFL, we look at it like, oh, what a fucking waste. But you can't. But your life doesn't have to be a waste, man. Just I wish you the best, dude.
Well said, Soto. Very well said. You're a nicer man than I. ready for some what up windbags?
Yeah, dude, let's go.
So we got some of our best responses ever from our last show.
Oh yeah, they're killing me.
So I'm not gonna. I can go up and down the comments and just go through all the messages we got, just like shitting down your chest, Soto. But I won't. Lord knows I want to. We don't have enough time.
There's plenty of time for that.
So we'll just touch on that briefly. Raider Zach said, no fluff. Really enjoyed the pod, guys. Great work. Keep it up. Carr just needs a damn defense. Soto will make a believer out of you. So let me ask you this, Soto. Would one season completely alter how you think about Derek Carr? Let's say Derek Carr throws for 4,200 yards next season, 30 touchdowns, 4 picks, just goes fucking bonkers. Would you alter what you think about him, and vice versa? Would you go from you saying he's a solid, above average quarterback that can't take a bad team very far, and then say, okay, I changed my mind, he sucks? Like, will one season drastically alter how you feel about him one way or the other?
I don't think one season will do it. Okay. I think it has to be prolonged. It's very similar to if we use Tom Brady as an example earlier, if Tom Brady in that group of years had one bad year, you wouldn't consider him a shitty quarterback, right? Or even too much less of a quarterback. He had a bad year for whatever reason. That's not a career. Right now, his career is 42% winning percentage. If he wants to change that, he has to do a few things to change. Change that. And one of them is being that heartless killer. He has to have that killer instinct and continue to put up points. And Barry, put your foot on the face and crush your opponents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't just take a lead and just kind of, you know, let a team come back on you. And that's happened way too often. We've seen it far too often.
Again, I would blame the defense more for that than him.
He still stopped scoring.
There's moments.
There's still blame to be had. I want to get into that. The fumbles, just some of the questionable checkdowns that have, you know, we can go on and on. But
and I think it's still up for debate whether that's a Gruden problem or a Carr problem. I think I think it's fair to say that that's not 100% Derek Carr.
I was saying that under Del Rio too, so it wasn't just a.
I don't know. I think he was better under Rio.
I think he was better under Del Rio too. I think it was more open. It was more of an offense he was used to in Fresno State, a more of a wide open offense. He also had, you know, Michael Crabtree and Amari Cooper.
Jared Cook, not as good as Waller, but good, right?
Good, damn good. He's still starter in the NFL. Yeah. He starts for every other team he goes to. But he had weapons.
I was so weird.
Now I know why.
Yeah.
Now I know why.
Secret weapon brewing under
this fucking guy is going to be amazing.
Troy Butcher. Now, we were talking about Carl Joseph last week. The Raiders picked him up. We were both super underwhelmed. They're like, okay, that's nice for.
Happy with it. I was happy with it because I took it for what it was.
Yeah. It was like a $2 million investment, maybe, yeah, of a guy that knows the team, knows the system. All right. We'll just fill him in on a 1 year deal. Troy Butcher says Cleveland just invested a first round pick in Delpit and signed one of the top three free safeties in Johnson.
True.
Carl Joseph was meeting with the Steelers before we swooped in to grab him. Joseph is so underrated. It's not funny, but I'll let his play do the talking. I mean, we've got 5 seasons of watching him play. Is he that underrated? Is he something that we're missing?
Yeah.
I don't think he's bad. I mean, he's bad.
No.
Good run stopper. Pretty disciplined.
Yeah.
He doesn't make crucial errors, but he is undersized. He's not a ball hawk. He only averages one interception a season.
No, he doesn't average. He only gets.
He literally gets one averages and literally gets one a season.
So, I mean, look, he is what he is, man. He is a quality NFL starter. Is he a Pro Bowler? I don't think so. Is he, you know, a piece of shit steak on, you know, that you toss away? No, he's not that either.
Is he the best free safety on the Raiders? Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Best
free safety we've had in quite some time.
Since we had him 2 seasons ago.
Well, he's better than he was. I think he played pretty well last year. But, I mean, if you get a Johnson, you know, from the Rams, like, dude, that guy's fucking legit.
I mean, this next season is, again, it's so hard to make any sort of calculations or judgments because you're going from Paul Gunther, defensive coordinator, to Gus Bradley. Like,
yeah,
Paul Gunther was so bad, and that's the only experience Carl Joseph had with the Raiders was under PG. It's like, it's hard to say. Like, could the defense be just as bad as it always has? And we're just like, all right, these players just aren't good. Certainly possible.
Mm-hmm.
Could they do a complete 180 and approach average?
It's happened.
Look at
the Dolphins. The Dolphins had a shit defense 2 years ago, and last year they were one of the best defenses.
Yep.
And CJ said it last week. Freaking Wade Phillips took a Falcons team who was god awful, and he's like 4th in the league the next year. So
yep.
It all depends on the pieces that we get. I think getting a Micah Parsons type player on your team, filling some holes that you have in the secondary, seeing who's a late cut, a roster cut, a salary
cap casualty
cut,
type of thing.
Cap casualty type of thing. See if we can fit. And Gus Bradley's been proven to be the kind of guy that can make those things happen.
Last one. Chris Briggs comments. Who would you rather have in a 2-minute drill, game on the line, than Derek Carr? Now, he's saying it almost rhetorically, but I think that's a good question. Because I think Derek Carr is a great quarterback to have in a 2-minute drill. How many quarterbacks would you take over Derek Carr in a 2-minute drill?
Okay. Well, Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, Drew Brees. Let's see who else.
Well, you're talking historically, like not Drew Brees this season, right?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, the quarterback that we've seen.
How about next season?
Right.
We can predict next season.
Let me see these teams. Let's pull up these teams. Let's see the quarterbacks here.
Because I think Derek Carr is way up there. One, because he's proven it. And we can also get into, like, how deep into this do you want to go? Like, is it he's immediately plugged into the Raiders offense? Because he's got the system down, the relationship with the receivers, et cetera.
Okay. Now we're putting a little bit too much.
But is it just like, all right, the best 2-minute drill quarterbacks next season? Who do you think they'd be?
Let's take a peek. Mahomes. And
Rodgers.
Yeah, I'm gonna start with the AFC West. Mahomes.
Well, Mahomes and Carr.
Well, I mean, Herbert, too. That kid's a stud. Let's see. Okay, here are the NFL teams.
Has he done any crazy comebacks, though? Because like the Chargers just like their special teams would just crap the bed. He never had a chance.
He never had a shot. But he always had them in those games, though.
Mm-hmm. But 2-minute drill, specific skill set.
He did it twice against us. He went against us when we won, and he went against us when they beat us in overtime. So he's done it twice against us. So that's a kind of an iffy. It's either Packers, Rodgers, no, Niners don't have anybody. The Eagles, no. Roethlisberger, he turns the ball over too much, no. No, Cleveland Browns, Chicago, no. Tampa, yeah, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson. Miami, no. Denver, no. The Giants, no. Danny Dimes doesn't do it for me. Washington, no. The Bills, yeah. That kid's a stud, man.
Josh Allen, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and go with the Josh Allen. Jets have nobody. Ravens, Lamar Jackson's tough, man. He can move the ball.
He's not a great two-minute drill guy, though.
Yeah, it's because he runs too much and it takes too much time off the clock. So I'm not going to say that. The Bengals, that's an interesting one.
No. The line's too dog shit.
All right, Carolina, no. Kyler Murray, what do you think?
How is he in the two-minute drill? I don't remember Kyler Murray like doing anything like heroic and winning games.
I mean, I think what we're saying is we put him in that situation.
Yeah.
How is he going to fare? Again, I like that he runs, but he runs to the perimeters.
Yeah.
He
all these guys who can run out of bounds and get like 7 yards. That's a big plus.
Matt Ryan, Matty Ice.
I take Carl from Matty Ice.
Okay. Stafford, again, very similar.
Guy. Yep.
Colts, I don't know who they're going to have out there. What do they have now? Wentz? That's not going to work.
No.
Your boy over in Houston?
Why is he my boy?
Watson. <let's...
laughs> All right. Top 10? Take Derek Carr?
I would say he's around the 10-ish around there.
We'll make a believe out of you one day, Soto. Guaranteed. One day.
I mean, look, if you take a look at the comebacks he's had, he hasn't been on the flip side of that 20-3 score and brought them back. He's been on that back and forth type of game where he just happens to have the ball last. Now, granted, he does move the ball down there and he does score, but that's why he's been in those situations that many times. So partly the defense as well gives him that many chances to do it.
All right. Well, I don't know what's going to happen first. You become a Derek Carr believer. You actually give me those 20 pushups you owe me for thinking
better
knock out Jake Paul. But until one of those happens, knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Autumn Windbags. We appreciate it. Tons of draft coverage coming up in the next few weeks, both on the podcast and on YouTube. So make sure to check it out. And also make sure to subscribe, rate, comment, all that good stuff, also on social media as well. Till next time. Later.